Provocative talk and comments, which I'm sure generated lots of questions, and we're going to bundle them together a little bit because we only have 15 minutes for discussion. Yes, please. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Up there.
My name is Orhan, I'm coming from Istanbul. My question goes to Medya Shpri. So indeed, there are big parallels between the city I come from and Berlin. They both have a very strong tradition of the social production of space. And still there is a very strong offensive wave which has been launched by this neoliberal international, if we may label it so. It was very revealing to hear that the neoliberal city is still a city very contested. So my particular question would be, you have been showing these images at the very beginning of your presentation, presenting the Medya Shpri project from the perspective of the developers. And then there was a second slide in red and gray from the as seen by the protest movement. So how do we have to understand this? If you could go back to this slide at some point, could you please explain us a little bit more? How does the movement see the? What does the red in particular indicate, and how do we have to understand? Is this an alternative plan, or is it seen as a threat, or whatever? Just highlight more a little bit more on the slide, if possible.
Okay, thank you. Then the gentleman with the green microphone.
Yeah. Armin Kuhn from Berlin. And this is a question to Julianne. Thank you for your presentation. It was very convincing to me, this stressing of continuity with daily life in the formation of political action. But these elements of daily life that you mentioned, flexibility, mobility, unpredictability, I wonder myself if the formation of political resistance is not more grounded in the incompatibility with these conditions, which are more also neoliberal conditions. So if taking the case of mobility, if not like the demand of staying less than the capability to move is at the foundation of resistance, taking the case of displacement or taking the case of social centers evicted or community gardens or something else. So this is my question, what do you think about this?
Okay, Roger.
Hi, Roger Keil in Toronto, and I had similar questions I just added to Julianne. Mobility, maybe you can comment also on the opposite of these terms like immobility and, you know, as a fundamental condition. The ghetto is a place of immobility, but it has always been part of urbanity. So, you know, maybe you can comment on this. But I want to make a comment on more an appeal as we're getting towards the end of this conference. We're thinking about next steps. And Chester Hartman just listed an impressive numbers of agenda items to further think about things down the road. I realized, because this is more or less a transatlantic meeting, you know, we've mentioned the fact that there have been perhaps not as many representatives from other parts of the world. So we talk across the Atlantic, and there is now a new movement after we've yelled at the United States, both from Europe, also you've heard a lot of yelling down from Canada, where I live, towards the United States about the things that you've done wrong in the last 8 years. Now we hear a lot of things going the other way, and there will be Obamania coming. And a lot of talk will come about, you know, we've already mentioned it, Dorothy saw the banners at the demonstration this morning, already taken up the language coming from the other side of the Atlantic. Now, one particular issue has always been central to that transatlantic dialogue, and I always find that the most problematic of it all, because it's so central to discourse in the United States. It is so non-central to the rest of the world in that terminology, which is the question of race. And I think we need to find a different language to talk about this. We can't talk about race and class in German, it wouldn't be a book published with the title Race and Class in German. I've had pitched battles going on with Peter, with Klaus Wonneberger's in my chapter in your book, where Peter kept coming back at me with the question of race, and Klaus and I kept kicking back and saying, we can't talk about race in German. For historical reasons, it's impossible. But not only that, also in Canada, it would be impossible to ask the question of class and race in the same way. This doesn't mean we can't talk about racism and racialization. And I talked about racialization yesterday in my paper. But it's a different kind of language. If I say racialization, I'm saying something entirely different, because I'm not essentializing race in the way that it is often done, and now it will be done more, because you already talk about that black guy as if we knew what a black guy was. He's an African, for example, not an African-American, in that sense of the classical definition of that. So I want to leave it here, just sort of as an offer to maybe continue that question now that we're internationalizing the left, internationalizing this dialogue, perhaps to begin thinking more self-critically about the language we're using in this context.
Okay, thank you. Then we have two more questions in this round, and then this gentleman, and then lady in the back.
I just, Bob Cattrall, editor of City. I just want to raise one other missing question from this conference, and that is the end of the world. The end of the world as we know it. In other words, the whole topic of global warming, the end of oil, the effect that that will have on cities, whether cities will actually continue. Now, I asked that question in this session because in one of the two places I live in, I find that there's a large and increasing nucleus of ordinary people organizing on this issue. And my job as an intellectual is to sometimes feed in other expert opinions on, you know, how it might actually happen, what the timing is. But it's actually to listen to see what practical contributions I can make. For example, it's part of a movement called Transition Town. And they've suddenly got excited that the most practical thing they can do now is to organize a transition Christmas. Now, I never imagined as an intellectual that I would be there to help organize a Christmas. But my role, and this is something that Obama is really good at, is listening, so that you fully understand the other people's position and know when it's relevant to introduce other ideas. So I'm saying the role of an intellectual, I differ slightly from Peter's three slogans here, is to listen, to know when to intervene, to know what's relevant, to know when to bring in other parts of expertise if people want it. And having said that, my question really is, have other people come across this fact that there is there's a groundswell in a lot of communities to acknowledging that we need to organize on how are we going to survive in under global warming, the end of oil, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, thank you. Maybe we'll give you first chance to reply first, since we've had big questions about, you know, anything from media spray to the end of the world. So, and if you could just keep your responses brief, and then we can have a second round of questions.
I can respond rather quickly, I think. The question of the scale of the development. Actually, this slide is based on a projection of what's legally possible according to the building contracts. So it's not necessarily what it's actually going to look like, but it's quite likely that it's going to look similar to this projection. And the second part of the question concerning the response, as you pointed out, I think the scale of the development actually was a main resource for mobilizing people. And forgetting the response that the Media Spreeversenken and the whole movement in fact got. Last remark would be there's a certain difference, I think you agree, Ingo, otherwise say it, there's a certain difference between East and West, as we just mentioned that very briefly, because in Kreuzberg, large-scale development is very unpopular. In some parts of Eastern Berlin, including Friedrichshain, there are certain segments within the population that still think this is not altogether bad because of the job issue that Ingo touched on at the very end. I hope that'll do.
I want to answer that question and the question before, because I didn't go over what those groups were doing. And let me just do it quickly, because I think it answers some of the questions you all are raising. SAGE was the first group to have a comprehensive benefits agreement when a very large mega project came in, which was the first go-around for displacing people in an area of the map I showed you that affects about 150,000 people. Comprehensive benefit agreements are not the end. If it were the end, it wouldn't be very startling. But there is a vision which is tied to the People's Planning School about what people think their city is all about and what their particular area is all about. At the other end, Union de Vecinos, who works from a liberation theology perspective and expected to go into housing, when they started knocking on people's doors, and they don't use, so what do you think about the right to the city? But rather, people talk about, I don't like what my conditions are in the way I'm living. And in the process, what happens, it goes from, I don't like it, to, I don't think I should be living under these conditions, to, I don't think my neighbors should be living under these conditions, to an action. And what's the action? They take over an alley. What do? They raise $600. They don't repeat it because it's a model for other people in the community. Now, that doesn't stop there either. And so they intervene with the state in order to be able to get more streetlights. So the idea, and I could go down the list for every single one, the idea that you have to organize around major issues is true. Had SAGE not intervened with a coalition of 26 community groups, the Staples Center would not have had to, a private entity, would not have had to give up money for job creation, and it was done with the union. In the Union de Vecinos case, which started with public housing, we lost the case. They did, in fact, learn, the other side, the housing authority, learned from what we were doing, which was phased relocation and benefits, and they tore down the other housing. The group who was working there didn't fade away. They sustained what they did and said, okay, we're going to move to all of Boyle Heights. The Community Development Corporation, the East Los Angeles Community Corporation, and I'm not a believer in, I don't support community development corporations as a movement-building device, vehicle, has an organizing division. It's one of the very few CDCs that has organizers on it, because they know that developing by itself is not enough. The Esperanza group knows that there are health problems, and they have promotores who go door to door, who are people who live in the community, who talk about lead-based paint and asthma and cockroaches and what have you. And that's a step to intervening with the state again, because there are certain regulations that the state can do. The Korea Town immigrant workers organized, young people organized against the older, respected generation of Korean restaurant owners who were paying slave wages, and in the process, they did multi-ethnic organizing. So black and rather brown and Asian were, it was one of the first efforts to do that. What the Right to the City frame has done is it's brought those groups together for the first time, so that the group that's working with a mainly Latino black audience, if you will, is now in the same room talking about similar campaigns with the group that's working with Latinos. The groups are talking to and working with Koreatown. The South Asian Network reaches the diaspora and is the only agency, and it takes on issues such as gay pride and domestic violence, and they make those visible. So, you know, I would not like you to walk away from the room thinking that these are individual organizations with great benefits. These are organizations who are working to develop a movement, and I think it happens to be one of the best models in the country. And I think some of it is transferable to other parts of the world. I think that, you know, let me stop because I'm
To respond to the question of mobility and immobility, I want to make it clear that it is not, what I was making was not a normative celebration of mobility. In the sense that I think everyone's very well aware that mobility is not equally distributed, let's say, and that some people are forced out of their homes. For instance, there was a photo in Jackie's presentation on the lower left corner of Hotel Morrison. One of the women that we've been working with was forced out of that hotel where she arrived when she just entered the U.S., and it was extremely distressful to her. The basic point that I was making is, and I think of it, stories of migrations are also a lot about that, because many of these women didn't choose to come to the U.S. They had no choice. They had to flee from a violent husband or whatsoever. There's so many different stories. So, of course, mobility is not always positive. The argument was more that how, when you speak to people that experience mobility, whether it was voluntarily or not, how is it that this is incorporated in their everyday life, and what do they do with it? And how do they use or transform their experience into critical thinking? And I'm not saying that we should not fight these forced displacements, absolutely not. So it wasn't normative, it was just a matter of trying to understand emotionally how is this dealt with. And the final little tiny remark I want to make is I think we have to be very careful when we talk about ghettos, for instance, or when we talk about certain sections of the population that are supposedly more immobile or that are forced to stay put, that mobility is much more than just moving through space. There are very different types of mobilities, and virtual mobility, for instance, or symbolic mobility, or being able to simply, to my view, mobility is much more than just being able to move, and to be able to connect to other people elsewhere is also a form of mobility.
A couple of very quick comments. I think you're absolutely right that we don't pay enough attention to global warming, climate change. The Obama book has chapters both in the domestic and international sections, and, you know, just really making the point that we've got to do so much more than buy hybrids and recycle more if we're going to take this seriously. The point about terminology, I think, is very important. It is profound to hear that subtitle could not exist in a German publication. And we have to be very aware of how we phrase things, what language we use. One last thing about coming to grips with history. Canada recently apologized for the way it's treating its native population. And there is a move now to replicate the Truth and Reconciliation Commission model from South Africa, at least one in the United States that I'm aware of, in Greensboro, North Carolina, where there were, in 1979, killings. Five people were killed by skinheads, American Nazi Party members, KKK members, at a civil rights demonstration done with the complicity of the police. Police who simply didn't show up in order to protect the march. And with some religious groups, they put together a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which is actively underway now, when I was down in Greensboro recently, and really is kind of bringing back that history in a way that forces people to deal with it in a non-vengeful way and understand the relationship of a history of three decades ago to life now in Greensboro, North Carolina. And I think that model is one that we might want to try to replicate in many different places.
Much, and I think we're going to, in the interest of time, have to take it with Bertolt Brecht, who said, in effect, first we eat and then come the morals. So we will actually close it here. And those of you who still had questions, there will be time in the final discussion or, you know, also during the coffee breaks. But please join me in thanking our panelists for very thought-provoking and provocative presentation. Yeah. And we will continue on, as stated on the program, at 2:45. So.